Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathimerini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. Hezbollah and its political allies have intensified Lebanon's political crisis and paralyzed the new government by trying to push the cabinet to dismiss Tarek Bitar, the judge in charge of investigating the 2020 Beirut blast. Last week, on October 14th, clashes erupted in Lebanon's capital city over the probe into the explosion of Beirut's port, with deadly shootings taking place at a demonstration organized by Hezbollah and its ally, the Amal movement. The incidents were described in reports as being reminiscent of moments from the bloody 1975 to 1990 Lebanese civil war. Stephen Howard joins The Greek Current to discuss this latest incident, what's at stake for Lebanon, and look at what steps Washington can take to support the country. Stephen Howard is the Director of Policy and Outreach for the American Task Force on Lebanon, a leadership organization of Americans of Lebanese descent. Stephen, welcome back on The Greek Current.
Great to be with you, Thanos.
Stephen, on October 14th, we saw violence erupt on the streets of Beirut, and the incidents were described by you in your latest piece and in other media reports as being reminiscent of Lebanon's tragic civil war. Can you give us some context here? Why are we seeing tensions escalate to the point of deadly shootings in Lebanon's capital?
Absolutely. Lebanon is home to no shortage of crises at the current moment. As your listeners will know, it's the largest per capita home of refugees in the world. It's suffering what the World Bank has called one of the worst financial crises since the mid-1880s and has an incredibly high level of government corruption. So the Lebanese people right now are truly suffering and hurting at almost every level. For over a year now, Lebanese citizens from all segments of society have been calling for democratic reforms and for an end to corruption in Lebanon. And their calls for reform were validated in an incredibly tragic way over a year ago when we saw the Port of Beirut explosion take place last August, in which over 200 people were killed and thousands of others were injured. This was an incredibly traumatic event, and it really points to the heart of what Lebanese citizens have been calling for, which is government reform and the end of corruption. So on top of all of these other crises that Lebanese are facing, whether they be economic, whether they be security-based, whether they be just meeting, you know, the basic essentials of everyday life, tensions are just boiling. And you know, the situation there on the ground has been troublesome for years, but has just really reached a boiling point. And so it is incredibly important that the U.S. look to the situation in Lebanon now and proactively do whatever it can to prevent any further incidents like this from taking place.
Before we get into what the United States can do and what Washington should do, can you elaborate on what took place on the 14th last week?
What we saw take place is that the judge who's investigating last August's Port of Beirut explosion, Tarek Bitar, had been summoning various government officials as part of his investigation. He had attempted to interrogate multiple ministers of government, some of whom have been refusing to participate in the investigation. And so Judge Bitar has issued warrants for their arrests. These members of parliament have continued to really try and just file complaints and delay the process as much as possible. The reason why is because parliament was set to resume on October 15th, meaning that lawmakers would actually regain their immunity. And so one day before that deadline, we saw Hezbollah and the Amal movement organizing a demonstration at the Justice Palace, which is in a predominantly Christian quarter of Beirut, to call for the removal of Judge Bitar from the investigation. And then what we see happened is that protest, their supporters were attacked by gunfire, in which 8 people died and 32 were wounded. And we're not really sure who fired, but it was obviously a very tense situation that had taken place. And Hezbollah had pointed to the Lebanese Forces, which is a Christian political party, as being responsible for orchestrating the attack, which they notably have denied. But what we saw here is that the politics around this investigation, not respecting independence of the judiciary, and unfortunately, it just took on an incredibly sectarian tone. And we even saw Hezbollah fighters marching through the streets, chanting. We saw children, you know, sent home from school. It was a very tense situation. And you know, fortunately, the United States security partner in country, the Lebanese Armed Forces, were dispatched to the streets and they were able to cease hostilities and bring order, which is reassuring, obviously, from a U.S. perspective. But it was a very frightening incident, and we must look now to prevent these types of outbreaks from happening further, because this is a country that does know the pain of conflict and borders, obviously, another country, namely Syria, that currently is still experiencing a civil war. So it's an incredibly alarming indicator that we need to do more.
Stephen, you mentioned how Hezbollah want the removal of Judge Tariq Bitar, who has been investigating the blast in Beirut that took place last year. How have Hezbollah and Lebanon's political class been working to block this investigation? And what are they so concerned about?
The primary concern is that they, being Hezbollah or corrupt officials in the government, would be implicated in the findings from such an investigation. And so they're really concerned that they're going to get caught with red paint on their hands. And so what we're seeing is just multiple officials refusing to participate, delaying, filing, you know, every kind of procedure that you could think of to try and not participate in questioning. What we saw also was that, you know, following the firefight, five ministers in the government representing Hezbollah and Amal announced that they would boycott the government meetings until Judge Bitar is removed from the investigation. Fortunately, the Lebanese Judges Association stated it would no longer accept cases calling for Judge Bitar to be removed. But this is the issue, right? Is the judge is trying to conduct an honest investigation. He's trying to speak with relevant officials, and they're not showing up. They're doing every kind of bureaucratic maneuver possible to avoid having to answer his questions as part of his inquiry. So really what's on the line here is, you know, independence of the judiciary and respect of the judiciary from members of the political class.
Just this week on Monday, we saw Hezbollah's leader make an announcement that he had 100,000 fighters at his command. This announcement is likely to further escalate anxieties and tensions in Lebanon. What do you make of this, especially within the context of the investigation of the explosion at the port of Beirut and the latest shootings that took place in the capital?
Well, what I think we need to look at is the positives, right? And that is, as I mentioned earlier, as the clashes were taking place, it was the security partner of the United States, the Lebanese Armed Forces, that were able to bring peace and order to the streets. And while Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs Victoria Nuland was in Lebanon, she actually announced an increase in assistance, $67 million to the Lebanese Armed Forces, which is part of just actually a positive trend of increase of assistance that we've seen this year. Now, much more obviously needs to be done. And while we obviously can't verify those types of claims, what we can do is look at what we are doing in Lebanon to contribute to peace, to a stable and secure security situation. And we have, you know, demonstrable results from the Lebanese Armed Forces, and they are a reliable partner. And so certainly what we need to do is just make sure that our partner is well-equipped, well-trained to be able to address the security crisis that Lebanon faces.
You wrote that some Lebanon observers have warned that the possibility of another civil war in Lebanon should not be discarded. In your opinion, what are the main questions now facing Lebanon's government and its elected officials if we're going to see tensions de-escalate?
The political class in Lebanon needs to obviously respect democratic institutions in Lebanon, such as independence of the judiciary. And it also needs to really understand that they exist to serve their constituents, the Lebanese people. And so we really want to see just the fact that democratic institutions be represented. We have, you know, a date for an election coming up in spring. We want to see everything run smoothly and obviously transparently in that process. But Lebanese politicians need to come to terms with the fact that they must put the needs of their constituents over their own self-interests. Otherwise, all the protests that you're seeing, the lack in confidence in Lebanon's government that we've seen, is just going to worsen. And so what we really need now is to really work with the next generation of Lebanese who are calling for reform and who are calling for change, and also try and find ways to bring them into the fold, because that is what's going to be needed for Lebanon to once again become the Paris of the Middle East.
You brought up how Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs Victoria Nuland was recently in Lebanon, where she announced $67 million in additional aid to the Lebanese Armed Forces. Meanwhile, we've also seen the State Department make positive statements on Lebanon. The White House has also called on the investigation of the Beirut port explosion to move forward, and key senators have made similar calls as well. What more do you think Washington can and should do when it comes to Lebanon?
We've seen some good proactive measures taken. The House Foreign Affairs Committee held a hearing on Lebanon this past summer. We also see that there is some legislation, you know, supporting many of the proposals that we've discussed on this call in the House Foreign Affairs Committee. But I think that what we really need, to be truthful, is what Ambassador Ed Gabriel, president of ATFL, has called for some time. And that is, you know, the U.S. needs a Lebanon policy that's actually a Lebanon policy. And what he means is, unfortunately, for many years, the U.S. has really prioritized Israel, Iran, or other key issues in the region. And Lebanon has always been kind of categorized as a subpoint or an afterthought to an Israel policy or an Iran policy or even a Syria policy. And what we can see is just when you look at the firefight that we saw last week, when you look at, you know, the economic crisis, the refugee crisis, the energy crisis, you can go on and on and on with the crises that Lebanon's facing, is that it can no longer be an afterthought. It needs targeted attention. It needs a special and unique approach. And so I think that the more that we can see of U.S. lawmakers just paying unique attention to Lebanon, whether that be through legislation or, you know, it could be defense assistance supporting our American universities there, it can't be an afterthought. It needs to be a priority, and it's deserving of its own portfolio.
Stephen, thanks for joining us again on The Greek Current. It's great having you with us.
Thank you so much, Thanos. Look forward to talking with you again.
In other news, the European Union's executive said on Tuesday that Turkey's bid to join the bloc had come to a standstill amid serious democratic shortfalls in its most critical annual report since Ankara began membership talks 16 years ago. The European Commission said President Erdogan's government had overseen a continued erosion of democracy and the rule of law and had ignored the EU's recommendations last year. For the first time, the Commission's report questioned whether Ankara was serious about implementing EU-backed reforms. While Erdogan's government has introduced judicial reform packages and a human rights action plan, Ankara has yet to deliver concrete actions that would affirm commitments to rule of law. Finally, the Financial Times reported on Wednesday that Turkey is set to be graylisted by the Financial Action Task Force on Thursday for failings in its approach to combating money laundering and terrorist financing. The move comes as foreign investment in Turkey is already close to the lowest level reached under President Erdogan's tenure. This move could strike a further blow at a time when the Turkish lira, which has lost about 20% of its value against the dollar this year, has hit a succession of record lows and could fall further on Thursday if, as markets expect, the country's central bank cuts its benchmark interest rate again. Turkey's gray listing will heap pressure on the European Union to add the country to its own money laundering list. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.